Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boys Lip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Delvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
This goes over. The intro is supposed to start right when the show starts there, and there's like a 9-second delay, and then once the intro is over, it's supposed to stop, but there's like a 9-second afterwards. For some reason, it's picking up odd, but, excuse me, you got me tonight. I'm Ron. I'm the one that hosts this show and does all the talking. Mike is not with us tonight. We were going to have Joy Neighbors of Joy's Joy of Wine on tonight. She is going to be on next week, as is Mike. He will be back with us next week. So you're going to get the three of us on next week. Mike and Joy Neighbors and myself will all be here next week talking with you. So if you tuned in to listen to Joy this week and Mike, they're not here, but they will be next week. But that doesn't mean that you can't listen to me. I've got some stuff to tell you. I've got some stuff to talk about. And a few things to pass on to you. And if we fill the hour, great. And if we don't, then that's okay too. I always say that, and I end up talking so much that it usually fills the hour plus. So, what's been happening? Easter was this last weekend. Hope everyone Passover also and all that good stuff. So, hope everyone had themselves a good Easter and good Passover and everything, Good Friday and all that other good stuff with it. Today is April the 9th, in case you are listening to this on a different date. This is April the 9th, 2015 at 7:04. If you want to call me, you want to talk to me, 646-727-3235, and I will go and talk to you in the green room and then bring you on the air, and we can talk on the air and try to keep it on wine, if you will, since, hey, that is the name of the show, All About Wine. So start with tonight. We have some real estate. Yay, we need a little real estate music. What would be good music for real estate? I don't know. I'll have to ask Mike to see see if we can't find something so we can do a and then moving on up there. My engineer just suggested that. That's good. I like that. We got some real estate for you tonight. As always, if you're interested in any of these, give me a call or check out the Facebook page. Let me know that you're interested. Or go to the All About Wine webpage. Any of those, www.allaboutwine101.com. Oh, 101.com is the email? Oh, my engineer is in the background here correcting me. What is our website? Just plain All About Wine? BTR. Yeah, All About Wine BTR for Blog Talk Radio. So allaboutwinebtr.com is our website, and our email is allaboutwine101.com, and you can go to Facebook page, allaboutwine/Facebook, or Facebook/allaboutwine, but you can get over somehow. If you're listening to the program, you can. The opening, I think, has some of the stuff, and also the closing will have some stuff, so... Yeah, you can check any of those out. But if you want to get a hold of, but if you want to call me now, you can always do that too. Real estate. Here we go. Apple Hill Vineyard, adjacent to the famed Apple Hill region, 42 acres in two parcels. Superb viticultural site with 7 acres planted. 10 minutes to U.S. Highway 50. City water at ag rates. Hey, there you go. That's a good deal. Winery possible by right. Spectacular view. So, Apple Hill Vineyard. All right. Got some work to do, but you got a lot of land to do it on. 42 acres is a lot there for you. Oregon Vineyard opportunity. 520 acres of prime Oregon land fronting the Umpqua. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Umpqua, Umpqua River, near Roseburg. 36 acres, premium varietals planted with at least 200 additional cleared acres plantable on great soil. Water rights already in place. 4 parcels with small cottage. Wow, that sounds pretty good. No price again on either one of these. A Wisconsin winery, here we go, a 70-acre country estate, 5 acres planted in grapes, a 50 by 75 building with retail shop. So if you're up in Wisconsin and you want to pursue the winery up there, there you go. Spinetta Winery and Vineyards for sale. Charles Spinetta Winery, Shenandoah Valley, Amador County, features a turnkey winery operation. Tasting room building, commercial kitchen, outdoor event area, and a clear area for a home with panoramic views. No home listed, though, so a home is possible. Offered for $6.5 million. And I'm sure you can probably work with them on that. Santa Cruz Mountains Appalachian, Vineyard Development Land, Terra Resources. And that's all that says, so... There you go on that. Placerville Winery and Tasting Room. That's in the foothills of, or I say foothills. That's it's on the California side of the, going up to Lake Tahoe. Beautiful area there, actually. Really beautiful area. Winery home on 20 acres. Vineyard with Chardonnay, Zinfandel, Merlot, Barbera, and Cabernet. Great El Dorado County location. Only $749,000. Wow. Alexander Valley AVA. Prime Alexander Valley AVA opportunity with 360 views. 360 views. Or 360 degree view. Yeah, that's probably what it means. 360 views. 112 plus or minus acres on 2 parcels. 6 plus or minus acres planted, additional plantable. expired winery permit, two homes, barn, two wells, and a spring. And with the water situation in California, that is a big plus there. Texas winery owners retiring. Here, you got wineries all over the country on this one. Texas winery owners retiring. 40 acres of desirable northern Texas hill country, AVA. And hill country was listed as one of the top 10 AVAs, well, top 10 wine growing regions in the world by Wine Enthusiast magazine. So that's quite a plus here. It also has 4,200 square foot winery and a tasting room. The 10-acre mature vineyard is planted to climate-appropriate varieties. All farming, winemaking equipment, convoys, label is negotiable. Priced right at $775,000. That is a good price on that. $775,000 for 40 acres in Texas Hill Country. Winery for sale just east of Seattle. Winery, residence, tasting room, 3-plus acres. Only 30 minutes to Microsoft. And if you want to check out details and photos, go to tourfactory.com/1281864. Again, that's tourfactory.com/1281864. If you want to check that out. Vineyard and winery for sale. Alexander Valley again. Permitted winery, fully equipped, including farming equipment, approximately 15 acres planted primarily for Cabernet Merlot. No price. Culberry Ridge Winery and Vineyard. 21.3-acre, 5.3-acre vineyard, 3,600-square-foot winery building, tasting room. Equipment included Tempranillo, Syrah, Primitivo, and Bonnet. $950,000. Just shy of $1 million. So there you go. That's our real estate. See, now we need a little bit of music here. Now that would be... I'll have to talk to Mike about that. We need a little bit of real estate music that we can go in and go out of this segment on. Actually, we need to get a real estate agent that sells vineyards and stuff on. I've been trying to put out fillers, and I've sent them emails and all that, and nobody's responding to me. I think it'd be a good way to do it, actually. I mean, you know, you all out there listen, don't you? So if you know a real estate agent, or if you are a real estate agent that does vineyards and winery stuff anywhere in the country, I don't care. Get in touch with me. I'd like to have you on the show. So there goes our real estate section for this show. I got some stuff to talk about, a few things here that I've noticed over the past week or so that I want to share with you. One of the first things, and where is it? What did I do with it? Oh, no. Well, I guess I don't have it. I'll save it for another time. I won't even tease you with it, what it is. I'll save it for another time. First thing we got for you here, though, is some information on India. India wine, that's the country. India's homegrown wine industry sees a strong wave of growth on the horizon. The industry leader, Sula, which I guess they go by single names there. I'm not that familiar with Indian culture. Said that they've added 250 acres of vineyards this last year through contract farming, and they plan to add another 400 in this coming year. Damage caused by unseasonal rain to table grapes has helped the wine industry increase production of port wine. While the liquor ban in Kerala, K-E-R-A-L-A, Kerala, which has already resulted in a threefold increase in wine sales, is expected to continue to give a boost to the wine industry. So Kerala is a province there, or a state, or whatever you want to call it. And they banned liquor, but they didn't ban wine and beer. So the beer, the wine and beer sales are shooting up because of it. And, you know, and here's Sula. Well, Sula is a vineyard in Sula. Let's see, Sula Vineyards. Here we go. Rajiv Samant is the CEO of Sula Vineyards. He said they're going to add another 10 lock liters of crushing capacity, and that's L-A-K-H, lock liters. Crushing capacity in time for the harvest of 2016, which will take the total capacity to one core, C-R-O-R-E. And I'm sorry, I didn't look up that stuff because I didn't know these were in here. In order to increase production of low-end port wines, Sula leased 7 smaller wineries in Nashik. It also leased a winery in Bangalore to cater to the South Indian market. They're planning on investing for expansion, and the wine industry in India just took root right before the recession. Overproduction took a toll, and the smaller wineries could not succeed, and so a lot of them closed down. Many wine grape growers uprooted their plantations as wineries could not use their produce. The industry has been unable to convince these farmers to start planting wine grapes again. And so the recent weather, the freak damaging weather, has caused them to look at another crop. And it might be wine grapes, and stuff like that. So it's something that is in the horizon for them. Now, it would be easier to get wine grapes planted as farmers can see the merit in planting table grapes because of the destruction of table grapes in the weather, and then plant the rest of their farmland in wine grapes. The rising trend in wine consumption, based on the decision of the Kerala state government to ban liquor sales, has benefited producers of the wine industry over the last 3 months. Over the last 3 months, the wine sales have tripled. There will be 600 outlets that will exclusively serve wine and beer, a great boost for the industry. They expect to crush 14,000 tons of grapes next season against 11,000 tons in the current season. Overall, the industry of India is looking at crushing 20,000 ton of grapes compared to the current figures of 15,000 ton of grapes. So India is exploding in the wine industry simply because, unwittingly, the government has put a ban on some of that, which has caused it to people turn to wine. So that's always a good thing. I like that. New Mexico. The New Mexico Senate has helped in wine again. New Mexicans may be on the receiving end of delivered 6-packs of beer and bottles of wine after the Senate approved a bill that would okay the practice. The Senate voted 32-10 for the measure, which now goes to the House, and it's up to them. Under the bill, a restaurant or food delivery business could hold a beer and wine delivery license, which would allow it to deliver a maximum of two six-packs of beer and 2 bottles of wine to residents, hotel, or other licensed lodging facilities. Now, this is the test. The delivery would need to be accompanied by a food order of at least $20. So you can't just jump on there and say, ooh, I'd like a couple bottles of wine tonight. You need to order food with it, $20 worth of food. Which, you know, I mean, it's a good way to get the restaurants and all that. You know, call your local Chinese delivery store and say, hey, you know, bring me some good Chinese food, $20 worth, I don't care what it is, and a couple bottles of wine. Supporters say it would be an economic boon to restaurants, a convenience to tourists and residents, and help keep some people who want to drink off the roads, which is probably true. Opponents worry the law would make it easier for minors to drink. You know, that is always such a BS argument there. Always, always is. I mean, you know, if they don't know what else to say, they always start throwing in that, well, you know, now the minors are going to drink. If the minors want to drink, they're not going to get on the phone and order something and give a credit card, which they won't have one anyway, so they have to steal it from their parents. You know, it's not going to happen. They're not going to do that. And then they're not going to wait around for somebody to order it or if somebody delivered to their door. And if they do, somebody's going to deliver it to the door and say, hey, wait a minute, is your mom or dad home, or do you have an ID? I mean, it's as simple as that. But to say, oh, well, the minors are going to drink now. You know, come on, people, think of something else to really, if you want to have something to argue about, think of something else besides the minors are going to drink. If a minor wants to drink, and we all know this because we're teenagers once. If a minor wants to drink, the minor's going to stand in front of a 7-Eleven or a wine store or any number of places that sells beer. And as people walk in and say, hey, would you mind picking me up a six-pack and handing them a $10 bill or whatever? And, you know, I don't even know if they make six-packs anymore. I bought beer the other day, and all I can find was four-packs, which I thought was odd. But, you know, I don't know. It might be Florida thing. But, you know, that's how, and then they get their six-pack, and then, you know, they're happy and they're thrilled. Or, you know, they'll steal mom or dad stuff or something like that. But, you know, this, you know, they're not going to order $20 worth of food and tell, bring me two six-packs or you're at it. I mean, come on. You know, and I'll get off my soapbox here about that. But that's just, I hear that so often, you know, whenever I start reading these things and everything else, well, they're afraid the minors are going to drink. Oh, the minors are not going to go through that. Weren't these people ever minors themselves? And, you know, they stood outside the local convenience store and say, here, give me a six-pack. I maybe they weren't. I don't know. But I think it's a great law. I think it's something that would be a good way to do it. And you're right. It's going to increase business. And if I'm traveling into a hotel in New Mexico, that might be something I would consider. Hey, look, you know, I can order food in here and also get myself a bottle of wine while I'm at it. And probably, and if they're smart, they'll serve New Mexican wines. They won't be importing anything else in. So there you go. Tax credit hopes to build a new grape growers and wine hopes to build new grape growers and wine producers. Now, we have talked about how different states are hurting for people to grow. Everybody. California furnishes grapes and juice and wine and stuff to every state in the nation. And literally every state, in Alaska, Hawaii included, every state in the nation gets shipments from California, as do countries all over the world. You know, it's just amazing. I don't know if I told this story. I was out visiting a very large winery in California a few years ago, and they were walking around giving me tours of different things. And they took me over to this flatbed truck. Well, it wasn't really a flatbed. It had sides on it and all that. But they were pumping wine into this enormous bladder. And I mean enormous bladder. The thing held 500,000 gallons of wine. And they were pumping 500,000 gallons of wine into this enormous bladder to ship it to Germany. And they would drive it down to the boat and lift the whole container off the back of the truck and ship it over to Germany, and they would use it there. Now, you know, California shipping wine to Germany, and you would think Germany would have a lot of juice and stuff, but no, they're getting it from California. So, but every state in the nation is hurting for growers. We've talked to some around the country, and they say, yeah, we can use growers here. It's just amazing. We don't have enough growers of Texas grapes to be able to fulfill the need. And this is one of the reasons why we have so little access to wines from other states, is because the grapes that are used are made into the wines in those states, and they're usually sold within those states. Very few of them actually make it out of the state. So, you know, whenever you get an opportunity to get more growers in your state, that's going to help your state to a lot of stuff. But this article here, this is a representative Ann Zare of St. Charles, Missouri. is sponsoring a House Bill 506 in the state of Missouri, which is set to make its way out of the House and into the out of committee and out of the House into thing. But the bill allows a tax credit for wine production to also be used for the purchase of used equipment as well as for new equipment, which supporters will say will ensure the success of the tax credit by allowing smaller startup growers and producers to take advantage of the credit by buying used equipment, which is more cost effective. Yay! Zare said the bill does two things. It includes used equipment and sets a cap at $1 million. So the credit does not currently have a cap, but it's used at about $60,000 yearly. So set the cap at $1 million. But then when you can start getting used equipment, that's going to be even better. I mean, if I had a choice between using good, you know, buying good used equipment or buying brand new, financially, it's no question. It's a no-brainer on that. And there's a lot of great used equipment out there. In fact, I get calls three times a month from brokers to ask me if we have any used equipment and stuff because there is a big market out there for it. Representative Zare said, back in 1998, when it started, there were 30 wineries and 100 growers and accounted for 3% of the wine market in Missouri. Now, in 2014, which is the last data, there are 141 wineries in Missouri, and Missouri wine takes up 9% of the state's wine market. The winery business has grown from a $40 million industry in 1998 to a $1.6 billion industry now. This is in Missouri. That's why I've said over and over again, states, listen to this. Don't restrict wineries. Don't stop them. Don't regulate them out of business. Don't do too much to let them go. Let them do stuff. It's going to give you money. It's going to generate money for the state. I mean, I get people in the winery all the time from all over the country. Oh, and a line, they say, whenever we see a winery, we stop. And that's, you know, and if you have all these severe restrictions, Utah, then you have less wineries and less of a chance to start generating some of that money. So, according to Zare, the tax credit would grow a second generation of the industry because the 1998 bill grew the first. She also said that the starters from 1998 need bigger equipment. And if the current starters can buy the equipment from the big guys with the tax credit, then they can start a new line of second-generation business people, which is completely makes a lot of sense on that. You know, it's funny to hear a legislature actually making sense when it comes to wine. Missouri's wine industry now boasts more than 140 wineries and provides more than 14,000 jobs, according to the Missouri Wine and Grape Board. The bill unanimously made it out of the Economic and Development Retraction Committee and the Select Committee on Commerce. Missouri Grape Alliance, Grape and Wine Alliance, supported the bill in the committee, while a Todd Skelton testified against it. The opponent of the bill opposed it due to a fundamental opposition against tax credits, saying the tax credit interfered with private industry. Yeah, okay. The bill is currently on the House calendar for perfection, whatever the heck that means. I'm not a legislator or a politician, so I don't know how all that stuff works. But yay, that's something that could be very good. That's something that could boost Missouri's bottom line there. And doing that could also, without doubt, increase the number of grapes that the Missouri has for the industry in Missouri, which will increase the chance for Missouri wines to get outside of the state and other people to notice it. Yeah, really. let's see. Here's something. Oh, this is Michigan. Forget Napa Valleys. The next Napa Valley is Michigan. And with global warming, that is a very real possibility there. That's something that they're saying, you know, this is us. This is the what we're looking at. The I'll paraphrase some of this, but Michigan is saying they have a lot going for them here. They, you know, the awards and rave reviews and all that have been great, but nobody knows about it. And what I just said, states grow grapes, states make wines, but states keep the grapes and wines within their state because there's a market for it in the states, and they don't make it out of the state. Go down to your local wine shop. Go down to your local liquor store that has wine, and look on the shelves, and you will see wines from California, Oregon, Washington, maybe New York. It depends on where you are. Maybe Pennsylvania, depends on where you are. I think up in the Northeast there, you're going to find from those. And then your own state. If you're lucky, they will have wines on the shelf from your own state. And I say if you're lucky because certain rules and regulations, you know, forego having it on the shelves like that. But it's changing. It's getting better all over. And that's it. You don't see wines up on the shelf from Texas. You don't see them up there from Virginia, Maryland, Arizona. I mean, we've talked to wineries all over this country, and the number of wineries in some of these states would be so phenomenal to have them everywhere, but they're not because they don't have enough to ship everywhere. Within the states are doing it. So Michigan is saying, hey, you know, we're big. We have a lot of great wines here. When was the last time we drank a bottle of Michigan wine? You probably haven't, you know, and most people probably haven't. I get a lot of people from Michigan coming into the winery, and every once in a while they'll bring me in a wine, a bottle of wine from Michigan. I'll tell you, I've had some phenomenal wines out of Michigan. Not just fruit wines, which you think about, but a lot of other different ones. The industry in Michigan, with over 150 wineries producing over 1 million gallons of wine a year. Actually, only 4 states grow more wine grapes than Michigan. Who knew, you know? But most of it goes there. They give credit to the Laurentide ice sheet from 10,000 years ago when it retreated and left the ground, the soil, the rocky soil, perfect for wine grapes. And then the climate being ideal because it's, well, the largest bodies of fresh water in the world are surrounding Michigan, basically, which, you know, controls temperature and stuff. Great for Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Pinot Noir. The Michigan wine industry has been around long enough now to work out the growing pains that they've experienced for so long. And they're getting some phenomenal reviews around the world. They are looking at ways to do the Michigan wines better. They have a Michigan Wine Month, which actually is right now. It's April. But they're not happy with it. They say because, you know, the month of April in Michigan is usually cold. Spring hasn't really kicked in yet. It, you know, if it does, it's going to be toward the end of the year. And they said that if we're going to have a wine month in Michigan, it needs to be when the fruit are dangling from the vines and everything's green and you're starting to see something as opposed to just the early bud breaks and stuff, which you got to agree with them there. The Michigan Grape and Wine Industry Council was established in 1985, and it's one of the biggest promoters of the Michigan wine industry. The idea that Michigan has cheap, poor quality wines is something that they're constantly trying to better too. And, you know, the wines I have the experience to taste from Michigan has been phenomenal. There's a lot of great wines coming out of Michigan. I've had some ones that I would put up against just about any type I've ever tasted from anywhere else. And, you know, actually we can say that for just about every state in the nation. There are some wonderful wines out there. So Michigan, they are promoting their wines. They have, you know, not only been proud of their forests and their rivers and their lakes and the fishing and the hunting and everything that goes with Michigan, but they're also trying to make it so that when you think of Michigan, you're also thinking of wine. So if you do, then, you know, jump on it. That's get a chance to do Michigan grapes. By all means, do them. I got to share something with you here. We had people stop by, a couple young men. Engineer, young men, stopped by the winery Wednesday, and they said that their father had passed away recently, and as they were cleaning out one part of his house, they found some wine, and they called it wine. Actually, I think it's beer. But they found some wine, and they wanted to know if we sold any other wine besides just our own. And no, we sell our own. They said, well, they have these bottles of wine that they would like to, you know, want to know if we knew anyone that was available, any place available to sell it, or anyone that would be interested in it, or something like that. And, you know, no, we don't, and we haven't for some time had anyone that we would recommend anything to. So they thanked us, and they walked out to the car, and they were out there for a couple minutes, and they came back in, and they brought a box back in, and they set it on the counter, and they said, here, we really don't want it. We really don't have any need for it. We really don't know what to do with it. So here, you can do with it what you want. And they dropped off six bottles of one type and six of another. And I want to share this with you. Simply, it's not wine. And I know we're all about wine. But again, we do get off track every once in a while. And this is one of those times since these young men dropped us off. But this is from, and I'll read you the label, Family Rue, F-A-M-I-L-L-E, Family Rue, R-U-E. And it's the brewery, and that's spelled B-R-U-E-R-Y. The brewery, it says, contains alcohols, and it's the Melange 10. Melange number 10, the little number is in the middle. Melange number 10. The label continues, 60% ale aged in bourbon barrels. 40% L aged in bourbon barrels with chilies, chocolate, and cinnamon. A Hoarders Society competition yielded this south of the border blend of bourbon barrel aged anniversary and bourbon aged Old Richland with ancho chilies and Mexican style chocolate from Orange County, California. Brewed and bottled at the brewery in Placentia, California. Now, you can look this up, and I suggest you do. Thebrewery.com, B-R-U-E-R-Y, thebrewery.com. Thebrewery.com, I looked it up. I was curious what it was, and it is thebrewery.com. I looked it up, and oh my gosh, there are so many wines that they make. Are beers that they make. There are so many different types they make. There are places all over the country that they do it. There are stores that they sell it all over the country. I never knew. I was amazed to find this. This says on the back, Melange number 10 was designed by Hoarders Society members for the Hoarders Society members. The barrel-aged specialty is best enjoyed fresh, but may develop pleasantly if cellared properly. Best stored and cellared around 55 degrees or 13 degrees Celsius. in a dark place. Ideal serving temperature is 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius. Best enjoyed with friends and served in a tulip glass. And then the government, they have a government warning on it that, you know, drinking is going to cause all sorts of problems, everything, which is required. The other one was a chocolate rain. And this is Imperial Stout, aged in bourbon barrels with cocoa nibs and vanilla beans. This decadent version of Black Tuesday is proudly brewed with Tico cocoa nibs. I don't know. T-C-H-O, Tico. It says on the back of this one, Cocoa Rain begins as a single cask of beer at our very first release event for Black Tuesday back in 2009, and now has a storied history of its own. This ale will age gracefully if cellared properly, but the chocolate and vanilla flavors will be the most prominent when consumed fresh. Best stored and cellared around 55 degrees Fahrenheit or 13 Celsius in a dark place. Ideal serving temperature is 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius. Best enjoyed in a tulip or wine glass. When we opened the chocolate one, it fizzed and bubbled like a effervescent wine, which we don't know if it's supposed to or not. The chocolate one was chocolate. I'll tell you, you picked up a chocolate nose, you taste it, you got chocolate. It came out in, but it was like ale with chocolate, not chocolate with ale. It was like ale with chocolate. Interesting combo there. But check it out. I want to pass this on to you just simply because I never heard of it before. Thebrewery.com. Thebrewery. Thebrewery.com. Just FYI. Okay. Oh. I just wiped out something there I didn't want to wipe out. And I was going to read that. And, that makes me mad. Well, I am going to sit here and try to find it. And I'm not sure what date it was on. It was back. So I will find it. But it's going to take me a couple minutes. I guess I should play the Jeopardy music again. This is a good time for it. Let me go back to this. I wish I hadn't wiped it out like that. Because the article was something that I saw the original article and I started to laugh because I am always saying this. I'm always saying that Napa is the Disney World of wine. If you've never been to Disney World, you have to go at least once because of the rides and the overall enjoyment of everything and all that. So you have to go at least once to Disney World. And the same thing with Napa. I've always said that too. Napa is the Disney World of wine. You've got all sorts of different rides and you've got all the excitement of the tasting rooms and all the wineries and all that. And I'm not going to find this. It's just a fun place to go. Just you can take horseback riding, you can do balloons, you can do sailplanes, you can do the wine train, you can go by limos. They got wine buses. They get anything and everything you can possibly imagine is available at the Disney World of Napa, if you will. I mean, it's just amazing. Well, the article that I was going to read you, and I bounced it out of here, and I wish I could find it again, but I don't know if I ever will. The article that I was going to read you said that Napa is railing against the comparison to Disney World. And it just caught me as funny, because I'm always saying that it is the Disney World of Wine, and now they're upset about it. They're saying that that's, you know, don't be calling us and comparing us to Disney World, you know, which, you know, I mean, you know, there really is no comparison, because, you know, it's wine as opposed to kids' fantasy, if you will, but it just caught me as quite funny that they would rail against the comparisons to Disney World, which, yeah, okay, maybe you should rail against the comparisons to Disney World. We've talked about arsenic in wine. It belonged to different discussion groups and different things and all that stuff, and different people have made comments about the arsenic in wine, and I'm load this up here, and I'm going to, you know, just pass on a couple of things that people have said about this. You know, and again, you know, last week we talked about it, and week before we mentioned something to it too, but a couple of things here. Tracy Cervalloni, who is a trade ambassador at Wilson Daniels Limited, said this is completely overblown. Frankly, an obvious play by a testing company to get panicked wineries to buy their equipment and services. There's arsenic in many foods and beverages. It is a fact, in fact, a necessary nutrient in micro quantities, but toxic in large quantities. Not unlike selenium and other rare metals. And she goes on and talks unbelievable hype over nothing. Robert Schinkel, a winery owner from Schinkel Winery, regardless of the merits, the consumer's perception can be very damaging, which is a good point. And this is the main point of all this, too. When they start coming out with this stuff, you know, the consumer, all you need to do is you can't unsay something. You can't unhear it. And when they started talking about the arsenic in wine, and I've already had people ask me at the winery, have you heard about this arsenic in wine? And I've already had people ask about that. You know, the perception's there. It's going to be damaging. The Gerber is still trying to get over the arsenic in apple juice scare that was out, you know, a while back, and quite a while back. So, you know, it's once you say it, then it's going to be, it's there, you know. Don Rutkoff, an instructor at Kiamaka College, says they are suing big firms who make low-priced wines, not small guys, because the big guys' wines have more wallets, not more arsenic. You know, good point there. Earl Martin, a wine industry executive, says, I think all the comments to date in this string are pretty much on the money. The big guys make an easy target, and depending on motivation, they are a more lucrative target. And he said, yes, it's overblown, but again, it's going to be something that you can't take away from people. He says, has anyone considered or tested the glass? Cheaper wines equal cheaper glass. Some overseas suppliers have had quality issues in the past. Has anyone compared similar product in glass versus the containers to eliminate variables? Or in kegs or in bags in a bag in the box of wines? You know, these are things. I don't know if they did that. Keith Pritchard, owner of Slate Run Vineyard. I would suspect, he said, the higher arsenic levels and less expensive wine is the grapes are likely from the same general area in the Central Valley of California. Which, yeah, I would think is likely there may be more arsenic in the soil there. Rice growing in different places has varying levels of arsenic also, and the average is much higher than any wine, and children eat rice as well as the majority of the world's population. So here's something else to consider, too. I mean, it could be the soil. They're coming from the Central California area. Keith Richards says also a level of 100 parts per billion is not high. Certain countries, you know, want it less, but European Union limit is 200 parts per billion. And he says that parts per billion, here you go. Let's put this in perspective here, and this is very good. A part per billion is very small, equal to 1 second in 32 years, or less than one sheet of toilet paper and a roll of toilet paper stretching from Denver, Colorado to Honolulu. So there you go. One part per billion is that. And one part per million, one part per billion is not the same. It's a big difference. Even a one part per million, though, is the smallest. 1 million milligrams per liter. 1/8 of a teaspoon in 163 parts per million is 100. 1/8 of a teaspoon is 163 parts per million in a gallon of water. Parts per million. Okay. So, he says, for any misunderstanding, there is 1 million milligrams in a liter, or 1 milligram is 1 parts per million. So, and it goes on different things here. They continue to talk about the different, how small amounts it is and how, it's been overblown and all that stuff. And I basically said that last week, but I just wanted to share how small of an amount that is and how really ridiculous some of that stuff is. Next week, we're going to have Joy, Neighbors of Joy's Joy of Wine on. I always like to quote some of her stuff. She has a nice, if you don't subscribe to her blog, please do so. It's joysjoyofwine.blogspot.com. 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 Her latest blog from yesterday talks about the five fantastic bottle houses, and she has some pictures, a little story about the houses that are made from wine bottles and beer bottles and stuff like that. There's one in Russia, one in Nevada, one in Virginia, British Columbia, Canada, and Prince Edward Island, Canada. And Prince Edward Island has two of them, as a matter of fact. Three bottle houses. And you can tour them also. So, there you go. She also, last week, April 1st, article, came out with 10 great wine reads. Let me cover this quickly with you. If you don't get her blog, do so. If you do, then be a review here. But she suggests American Wine, the ultimate companion to wines and wineries of the United States. It lists over 7,000 wine producers and some of the best wines around the country and winemakers and 54 maps of local regions and stuff like that. I've seen that book. It is a phenomenal book. Exploring Wine, completely revised third edition. It's put out by the Culinary Institute of America. I've also had a chance to... Well, actually, that one I own. Eyewitness Companions, Wines of the World, Your Essential Wine Book. That's 2004 was the original printing. I thought that was rather old because I have that one also. I've got one of the first ones that came out. And it's about 35 major wine-producing regions of the world. So it's got a lot of history, maps, and photos and stuff like that. The History of Wine. Here's some books, too. The Judgment of Paris, California versus France, and the historic 1976 Paris tasting that revolutionized wine. They're coming out with a movie on that. The last I heard, it is still a go. So we'll see what happens. I asked Joy next week if she knows anything more about it. Wine and War, The French, the Nazis, and the Battle for France's Great Treasures. I've read excerpts from this before, and that's very good. It talks about what happened during World War II and the wines that were cellared, what the Germans did and all that stuff. It was very interesting. Passions, The Wine and Travels of Thomas Jefferson. If you are a wine fan and you've heard a lot of stuff about Thomas Jefferson, his wine, his love for wine, this is the book for you, especially French. He was a big fan of French wine. He tried to grow grapes in the United States. He never did produce. We talked to a winery from Virginia, and they explained that to us. He never produced a single bottle. But interesting stuff there. The Curious World of Wine. Facts, legends, and lore about the drink we love so much. Just quirky stuff, regional tidbits and stuff. This book sounds interesting. I've never seen this before. That sounds interesting. And Search of Bacchus, Wanderings in the Wonderful World of Wine Tourism. This is another one. It talks about wines all over the world, from Napa to Tuscany to South Africa. I've never seen that book either. Adventures on the Wine Route. I've seen this one. This is first published in 1990. I've seen this one around. It's a good book. It really is a very interesting read. And then she also said, why you like the wines you like, changing the way the world thinks about wine. I haven't seen this one, but it looks like it might be an interesting one. And then while we're talking about wines, too, we interviewed, and I need Mike here for this, we interviewed an author up in Napa Valley who wrote about, up in Finger Lakes, New York Finger Lakes. We interviewed an author up there. He around Buffalo. And he had some great stories. He wrote about that, and great stories. I mean, you get to know the people, and he actually interviewed people and talked to people and all that, and people have passed on since then and different things, and it's just like you've lost someone you know. So, interesting book there. Check the past episodes. The author, I'm sorry, I can't think of the name, but this was 3 years ago, I think. So check that out also. And Cooking with Wine, another thing Joy wrote about. This is very interesting. It does not lose its alcohol. People remember that when you cook with wine, you still retain some alcohol. It doesn't disappear. It just disappeared. No, it doesn't. So Joy will be with us next week, as will Mike. And we will be talking about what Joy's been up to. And she's got a new job, and she's going to be starting her new travel business with She's going to be starting her new tour to wineries and stuff, so she'll be talking about that. And lots of other stuff. As always, we will have an informative and interesting program for you to listen to. So be sure to tune in with us next week. And if you have any comments or questions or anything, get in touch with us. We will be more than happy to talk with you. We have a class coming up Sunday. I'll be back in a minute 30 here.
Hey, this is Mike. Coming up this Sunday at Florida State's winery, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. is another wine class. That's right, wine class at Florida State's winery, featuring winemaker, vineyardist, cellar master, and tasting expert Ron Hunt. He shares his experiences and educational knowledge of wine in a detailed 3-hour wine class. It's a lot of fun and a great way to learn something new about wine. Some of the topics that are covered include a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating wines, and my favorite, of course, the sampling of wines and a discussion. It's a great presentation, and it's located in the Florida States Winery Tasting Room. For more information and to RSVP, which we would recommend, please contact the winery at area code 813-996-2113. Again, Florida States Winery is phone number 813-996-2113. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Don't forget wine class this Sunday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Florida States Winery. See you there.
There you go, this Sunday. So call us if you can attend. If you like to attend, only $25 in advance, $30 at the door. Cheap. Cheap. So get a hold of us. We do have room. And we can get you scheduled in this class this Sunday. This Sunday is going to be the 12th, is that right? The 11th is Saturday, yeah, the 12th. So if you're listening to this program on the 13th, then don't call because the class is over. Also, Sunday is Orthodox Easter, so all of you who celebrate Orthodox Easter, happy Easter. And that's it. So we'll end up for tonight. We'll look forward to seeing all of you next week on All About Wine. No festivals this weekend or anything, so but that doesn't mean you can't stop by and enjoy a little bit of the wine and sit outside and bring yourself a picnic and just enjoy a little bit of our beautiful Florida weather here. It's supposed to be a gorgeous day, as always here in Florida. And so we'll look forward to seeing you next week. And get a chance to stop in at the winery when you're ever in the area. And y'all take care of yourself and open a glass and have a sip for me. See you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.